Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
Now I'm in this point of like, how do I learn more, understand how do I preserve this part of my identity and maybe pass down to my kids one day, make sure it's continued on. My name is Leslie Nguyen. My Vietnamese name is Phuong. I'm the author of a new kids book called Two Refugees in a Dream, which is about a common journey of the Vietnamese refugee experience. I'm excited to talk a little bit more about that today.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world.
Thank you for coming on. What has it meant to be Vietnamese to you all these years?
That journey has looked pretty different when I dissect part of my life, like as a kid, what that looked like and meant for me, and then all the way up into my 20s and 30s. I think I'm in a very different place when I think about being Vietnamese American. I was born in the States. Both my parents came from Vietnam. I grew up in a suburb outside the 626 area. I grew up in Dam Minh Bar. My parents did, I think, a really great job when it came to exposing me to Vietnamese culture and different traditions. Like I feel like every week we're going to someone's house to celebrate, you know, an elder or relative's death anniversary. We're gooming all the time. Vietnamese was my first language as well. Up the way until kindergarten, that's when I switched over to English. I went to temple, Sunday school, I learned Vietnamese. But I also think like as a kid, a part of me felt like I kept those two identities different. You know, there's part of me where I was Vietnamese at home, I felt comfortable and safe. And the other part when I came to school, for example, I didn't necessarily feel like I was always excited to tell people I was Vietnamese, or when people asked like what my last name was, did I have a Vietnamese first name? There's definitely incidents where I felt embarrassed or a little nervous to tell them, because I also have some own experiences where people made fun of my last name, and you know, like it's a common thing I think back then. So I feel like as a kid I kept those two identities different, and then in my preteens there's definitely part of my life where, you know, I think a lot about it now of like, why did I want to be so far removed from my culture? I don't remember like the exact date, but there was a clear moment when someone commented on me being banana, like you're yellow on the outside and like white on the inside. And I think back then I was like, cool, that's a compliment. And when I like dig deeper now and like think through why that is, you know, I think through like the media, what we see on TV, yeah. I think for me, I wanted to be quote normal and be American. And at that time, I didn't, you know, fully embrace my Vietnamese culture and heritage. It wasn't until I would say I got older post high school, I surrounded myself with certain friends and like I dig deeper into what it meant to be Vietnamese. I knew my parents both came from Vietnam, but it wasn't until much later I was like, oh, this is like what their experience was like coming here. I had no idea my parents like were in refugees camp for X amount of time. And just asking those like questions, like I think where I am now today, I'm in a different place, really embracing my Vietnamese heritage and culture, and now I'm in this point of like, how do I learn more and like understand, like, how do I preserve this part of my identity? And like, what would it look like to, you know, maybe pass down to my kids one day and like make sure it's continued on?
Why do you think we as humans have such a need to keep these stories from the past alive? Like, you just said that you want to bring this to your kids. And why is that important to you?
Yeah, I think for me, knowing where I come from is just something I really value. I think history connects us to, you know, like understanding like who we are as people, the values that we have, the characteristics, understanding why we are the way we are. There's a fine line, right? I do believe like the characteristics and values my parents have, you know, I have, at the same time, that doesn't define like my own future. But I think it's really important to understand that part of ourselves, and also celebrating, you know, experiences that my parents, my grandparents have been through.
You know, the more people like us sit and dig deep into our past, it goes into eternity. It's crazy how much information and stories are available that happened. I mean, it's like infinity. Time is infinity. And so the more you dig through all of these things, the more you're like, whoa, that is why I am the way I am today.
Yeah. And I think like as a kid, right, we see, or for me, I saw my parents one way. They were my parents. And it wasn't until high school or college, I was like, whoa, they had this whole other life before they had kids. And like, who are they as people? What did they study growing up? What was their life like in Vietnam before becoming parents? So it's really interesting when you like dig deeper and like understand that part of our elders and history.
Yeah, some of my friends are very city people. They're very cosmopolitan. They know every restaurant in the city, you know, whether it's New York or LA or Chicago, San Francisco. They know all of these details. But then you dig a little deeper and their parents were like farmers in the Mekong, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, whoa, that's crazy. Like to have like the offspring of these people who are coming from like these very farm communities by the Mekong. And then like you take it a step further, which is what I'm going through right now. There's this issue with the Mekong Delta. The water that comes from that is the main source is the Yangtze River up in China. And that's being blocked like with dams and, you know, all this like Chinese like blockage and stuff like that, which is affecting. Mm-hmm. And then like you look at the Instagram of these kids that are, you know, children from the descendants of these areas. And you're like, they have no idea like that's happening in Vietnam right now. And it's going to choke off generations in the future of water, or, you know, it's going to create arid land. It's going to kill farming for all of these people. And then their offspring is like partying, you know, going to nightclubs and having like, so it's like, it's all related and it's all connective. And if we don't do the job of like digging the way you did with your family's history, we are oblivious to past, present and future things that affect us.
Yeah. I think a lot about, just the importance of understanding the history. And that kind of connects to like the inspiration of like why I wrote the kids' book. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's a war going on in Ukraine, you know, and there's so many millions of people being displaced as refugees throughout the world right now, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think of all of that as a child of refugees when you think of their children or their future children?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that we're still living in this type of history. It's really sad whenever I think about it. And, you know, there is a moment of like 1 week where I just, you know, it was all over my news feed, and like just reading about it was really, really sad. And I remember, I think a lot of Vietnamese people who went through the experience of, you know, escaping war related to it. It connected to my parents. I think a lot about it's crazy to me because like I don't want to get into like the topic of war and like why it happens between countries, but the impact it has isn't just like those refugees, it's like generations to come. Yeah. And like the trauma that comes with those refugees and like how that will impact you know, their kids, and it's like a generational impact. And then I was also listening to this other podcast about how there's like going to be a food shortage and like how it connects yeah. with other countries. And it's really, really unfortunate. And, you know, these people, this is their last option, right? Like they have no other choice to like to do this. And I connect that back to, you know, what my parents chose to do, because for a while it's like, wow, you like left at 20. Like, what was I doing at 18, 20? Like, yeah. I couldn't even understand the amount of courage it took, the sacrifice. My dad saying like, yeah, there was a strong chance I didn't know if I was going to make it, but that was my only choice back then. Like, what am I going to do? And I think for my generation, we can't
fathom it. And when I was a young kid and I used to hear my dad or, you know, uncles talk about this, I used to get so frustrated. I'm like, It's not my story. I don't care. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit what you went through. That's not my issue, you know? But God, as an adult and, you know, being way past 20 years old or 28 years old, you know, like our mm-hmm. fathers, mm-hmm. you realize like the type of thinking, you know, when people read your book, they'll realize like your father made the decision that's, you know, it's like, it's today when you put yourself as an American, Vietnamese American, and you put yourself in these shoes of our parents.
Yeah.
It's bizarre to think about like a 20-year-old kid having to mm-hmm. make a decision to hop on a boat that he doesn't even have a ticket to get onto that boat. And he just snuck on.
Yeah.
And this is not some isolated story. I've heard this over and over and over. Some 15-year-old kid, 18-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid, just getting on a boat that they just see people packing up, and they just hop on the boat and they hide somewhere, you know, and they, they go on this journey.
Yep. Yeah. And I think to your point, it's going back to like what we're seeing currently, right? It's crazy that there's also this happening in other countries. And I think it's important to, you know, reflect and open this dialogue. And yes, our parents went through it. And for my generation and like my siblings, we can't fathom, but it's also like now thinking about like, wow, this is actually happening today. And depending on like your surrounding and zip code, you might come across people who are, you know, going through a similar of like acclimating to a new country, recently came here, and what that means for them, and hopefully making that connection of like, oh, this is, you know, my parents went through it too. And
You know, I'm not fully aware or educated on the result of 46 years later of the war in Vietnam and the refugees. And, you know, I'm sure there's poverty, there's deep poverty in a lot of corners of the United States and the world that produced these people, these refugees after the war. But at the same time, there's a lot of good stories, a lot of overwhelmingly good stories of like refugees becoming these amazing people. And mm-hmm. people who write about it, like Viet Thanh Nguyen, you know, it documents these ideas of refugee movements, and, you know, a lot of good comes out of, you know, the refugee story and displacement. And, you know, maybe it's just a part of like tectonic shifts in the Earth's, you know, plates, and, you know, new things come about it. Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not all bad and it's not all good. And I think that's why we're here. What inspired you to write this book? in a children's book form?
Yeah, and that's something I had to go through. Like, you know, I did my own reflection when I think about the topic of war and, you know, the refugee experience, and having that dialogue, I know can trigger a lot of certain emotions, talking to my parents, my elders. And it's not the easiest conversation to have with a kid. So I was like, oh, should this be a kid's book? Like, it's a tough topic to dive into. But I was really passionate to still do a kid's book because I just think it can spark really meaningful conversations between like parents and kids and just generations within family to have that open dialogue. I think kids are very resilient themselves, you know, they're very curious, and just having that kind of opens their eyes and understanding to also current events like we talked about, and making that connection can be pretty powerful. And it's a chance to, you know, like understand family history more. And that's something from the start of what inspired me to write this book was to, you know, have this be something we pass down in our family and, you know, remember what my parents went through.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that it's a children's book, because I have a 3 and a 5-year-old right now. And I can't wait till they get to a little bit older. I'm going to bust the book out and, you know, explain to them, like, this is sort of, you know, what Ombanoy went through, you know. Mm-hmm. And half, you know, their mother's side is Taiwanese, and, you know, their father's side is obviously Vietnamese, like, you know.
Yeah.
But the story of, you know, this mass exodus is very, it's very common. It's very common in the world. And it's, you know, we have a unique history in that it happened in 1975 between, you know, our journey was between Vietnam and the US. But, you know, you take it 5,000 years ago. There's, you know, I just went to a Passover dinner last week. We're in the middle of Passover season of the Jewish religion. Mm-hmm. And sitting in that for a few hours, listening to the exodus of the Jews coming out of Egypt and the slavery, you're like, wait, this shit was going on thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. And they recall this every year. The Jews talk about this journey every year. So watching you recount this in your own story and your own family is, you know, that's why I asked you that. That was like one of the first questions I asked you after, you know, what does it mean to be Vietnamese? Why do you think we as humans have such a need to keep these stories from the past alive? And it's important because it gives us comfort knowing that whatever we're going through is really nothing compared to past generations of their struggle.
Yeah. I often, you know, when I'm going through my own, like, you know, stressful week, stressful day, and then I think through what my parents been through, I'm like, oh, I should not be even complaining.
Yeah. Our hardest day is not even their shittiest day in the ocean, right?
Sure.
Yeah. What was your process in collecting the stories for the book?
It was definitely a long process. I actually had this idea, like, I think back in 2015 or 2016. And it was a few years of me just interviewing my parents and starting to capture. And, like, I had this really messy Google Doc of scripting out this timeline of sequential dates. And just looking back at all my Google Docs that I had for this book. The process was you know, slow, but also it took time. Something that I learned through this process was it's not the easiest thing to talk about for my parents. Like, growing up as a kid, they told me that they came from Vietnam, but they didn't really share, like, the why, and, like, the emotion didn't come out until later. I can't speak for all Vietnamese refugees, but, like, my parents, I think it's a part of their life they don't talk about often, right? And there's valid reason for why they don't bring up that part that was so bad for them. So I remember just being in the kitchen over, like, intimate family dinners with my aunt and my mom, and, you know, while they were cooking and they felt comfortable, that was when I felt like it was right to start asking these questions. And over time, you know, random phone calls to my dad of asking him like, oh, like what were the jobs that you worked while you were here? And, you know, uncovering the details. And over time, I just threw it into a book.
And they didn't know that you were putting a book together throughout the whole time, right?
Didn't
they ever ask you like, why are you asking me this?
Yeah, I just flipped it on them. I was like, yeah, I'm very curious. I just want to know. And I'm just working on something, but I never told them that I was working on this kid's book. It was until I like had the actual product and I surprised them with it recently.
That's awesome, because there's a lot of people who talk, including me. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to write this story. I'm going to do this project. I'm going to do all this shit. But we never get around to doing it. And it's powerful when you don't talk about it and you just do the work. And then one day you're just like, bap, here you go.
Yeah, it happened. Right? Yeah, it happened.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think to your point, like for me, when I put it out there, right, there's this extra weight and people might be like expecting it. And like, that's the question that comes up in conversations when I see family again. And I didn't want that added pressure. I just, you know, I was already passionate about it. So I decided during the pandemic, I had this time back to really commit to this. I wrote it even in like my bucket list journal to like do something like this in 2016, and being able to see that now and like have this book come to fruition was a really, really cool feeling. But in the in-between, right? Like writing a book is no joke. I really didn't realize just, you know, the time I had with my illustrator, the back and forth, the details, all of the editing, you know, it took a lot of time. This was like long nights, Saturdays and Sundays committed to this for the past few years. So I wanted that to keep it my own thing until it actually was like, okay, this is happening. Like I'm in the final stages.
And it's crazy too, because it's a children's book and children's book are very short. You know, it's a few pages really, if you think about it, and it took years to accomplish, which is, and you know, when I think about your book, it's like this, it's like, what's really hard about design work or story work or whatever is getting shit simple, simplifying everything. Right. Because I'm hearing, you know, obviously, you know, we all know the refugee stories from our parents, but how do you know what to put in and what not to put in? Right? How do you simplify that? That's a big problem and a big part of every designer's process, whether you're an architect or a movie director or a story writer, you're always, even chefs, you got to figure out what is the most simplistic thing to do here to create the most impact, because it's economy of like white space, right?
Yeah. Just going through this experience and all the steps it took to produce a book. Oh gosh, I have so much admiration for like the other book authors out there who are in more than one book. It's a lot of work, but rewarding, of course, at the end.
Definitely. So how did you know what to keep and what not to keep?
That's a good question. I think even today, I think a lot about how this book isn't, you know, there could be so many iterations of this book. There's a lot of detail that I left out, but it is finding this balance of like, is this appropriate for a kid's book? I did that research of like, what's the average word length, the text number for certain age groups, but also balancing like my goal to capture my parents' story. And like, I wanted the details to be in the book. So it's finding that balance. I went through a lot of Google edits. Like I have like more than 10 versions, and I did share it with like a small group of friends and family to get their feedback as well through the process, and connecting it to, you know, just my Google and research of what is age appropriate. But in the book, I think I really made it a priority to, one, capture, you know, like getting my family's names correct, knowing like where the specific city, the name of like my grandparents' fabric store. I wanted that detail in the book. And there's also like an educational component when you go through my book of like knowing.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know, the refugee camp that my mom went to and how it was one of the biggest hubs of refugees back then, I think that was also important to me to include in the book, because as I think through like who is reading this book, I wanted them to have that exposure. And maybe, you know, if it's one kid that like Googles more, and you know, it could be an opportunity to learn more too.
Yeah, I found that these little details that you included in the book were amazing. These are things that, like, for example, you have this explanation of Mok Lin Vang, right? Which is, how do you spell it? Tael? Tael? How do you?
T-A-E-L. Yeah, in Vietnamese, it's Luong. So it's like the gold currency back then, because we didn't have bills or coins. So that was the payment of currency.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know, growing up, I kept hearing Luong Vang, and I always thought it's a 1 ounce gold, but it's not. It's not an ounce of gold. It's some weird measurement, weird metric. And you break it down. You explain sort of like, this is the equivalent of what it is. And this is, and it makes me go, well, where did that come from? And it sparks my curiosity and inspires me to go and, you know, Google like, okay, the etymology of that word and how did it come into our existence? And this is how we traded. So I think this is like, you know, it's awesome. And, you know, there's millions of refugee stories and, you know, there's so many retellings of refugee stories throughout a lot of culture, and to have our very own is a very special thing. And I, the more that I think about it, the more I think that every family should have this in their library. You know, all Vietnamese kids should understand, like, this was something, this is a framework of what we went through as a people, and to get it exposed at an early age. Because by the time, you know, our kids are a little bit older, these stories might not be around to come out of the grandparents' mouth.
Yep. And that was, I think, the pandemic, you know, it was a lot of, I won't get into that piece, but I was very lucky to have this time back to like really reflect on, you know, what mattered to me, the importance of family, and, you know, my own values, which connected to like, let's create this book, because I'm seeing my parents get older every day. Their ability to, you know, really share the details, it's going to change in the next few years. So like you said, I think it's important to capture in some way to retell to our kids. Yeah.
Now, this is going to lead into a little bit more sensitive waters here. And I've been grappling with this idea for a while. I understand this idea of calling the month of April, Black April. And I understand the pain, the devastation, the loss, all of it from all of our families, including my family. Many, many lives in Vietnam and were lost on both sides. And particularly for the U.S., Vietnamese Americans, we call it a day of mourning, April 30. You know, and I can honor that. I understand it. But as I am journeying through the growth and evolution of our Vietnamese culture in the United States, I am now being confronted with other viewpoints to refine or redefine this narrative, reshape this narrative of such a dark day. You know, is there any way, and I'm going to use, and I'm not going to use the word celebrate it. I'm going to use the word honor it. Can we honor it in a different way? Is there, do you think that there's a different possibility? And I ask you as a peer-to-peer, somebody who's in the space of curiosity as well with me, not somebody who is challenging or, you know, trying to create controversy. I just want to know. Is there something that we can redefine? And maybe you can go back to your parents, but I want to know right now, do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question that gets me thinking for sure. Because like you said, it is a day of mourning when we think about, you know, the trauma and all the you know, they went through a lot, and, you know, the pirate attacks and like what it was like to be out at sea and that experience for a lot of people. Yeah, but I think there definitely is this window of opportunity to also, like you said, reframe it, because depending on who you talk
totally,
to, right?
Exactly. It was what I was going to say. That's not my narrative, you know, almost. It's not. It's certainly in my family history. It's certainly in my, we're on a certain side of history. Yeah. Certainly it's there, but me personally, it's not the way I look at it, or I'm growing out of it. It's metamorphosing into some other meaning. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's a day of celebration, but it's definitely a day to honor a new narrative and a new growth. And I'm starting that. I'm starting to trying to figure out like what is that? What do we as a community, what can we start to reshape?
Yeah. It gets me thinking of like, you can't honor it without that acknowledgement of what happened.
Yeah, for sure.
So first comes that acknowledgement of all those stories and understanding why there are people who are mourning on this day, but then also having this acknowledgement of like where we are today as a Vietnamese community and the stories that we can learn about of like, you know, refugees in the States and other countries around the world, and what that experience has led to today. So it's finding that connection and talking about it. And
I bring it up because it's in your book. You call it out, Black April, mm-hmm. and you explain mm-hmm. it in one of these the facts box,
the Fall of Saigon.
And you have it in there, so I, you know, it triggered a memory in me to say, or it triggered a question in my brain to say, hey, can we discuss this? And how do you think your parents would answer that question? Is it something that we can redefine? How do you think they would feel?
I'm very curious. Like, this is something I want to ask both my mom and dad, because as a kid growing up, this experience and day, it wasn't a good one, right? That's why they chose to leave. But I also think there might be a part of them where it was like, yeah, but look where we are now as a family, and where we are today, and, you know, the life that you guys get to live because of that. But I also want to acknowledge that isn't the narrative for a lot of people.
For everybody. Yeah. There's definitely probably people living in extreme poverty as a result of that day. People who have not risen to the levels of other people around them, and, you know, have perished in their mental health, and probably have been very, you know, living in dire situations. But, you know, you hear about so many other stories of families succeeding in such massive ways in the United States and abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that gets into probably other conversations of like why that is. It kind of connects back to that text box that you called out in my book. One of the reasons that I was curious about like, oh, how much did it cost for my mom to get on that boat? Because I think through class as well within Vietnam. And, you know, for a certain while, when you look at American history and who the United States let into the States, it was definitely selective, right? So I think through the wave of people coming in, the wave of people who didn't get to go in, like connecting that of like, who was it that was able to really get this opportunity to leave? And I know I don't have the full context and I'm not fully educated on it, but it just sparked my curiosity. It was like, was only people who could afford this to like leave the country? And it got me thinking. That's why I did that research and
There were people who were sent back. I know that, you know, through talking with some other people at that time, there were a good 15 to 20,000 people sent back from the camps in Hong Kong or Malaysia or Thailand, because they couldn't pass the interviews and they were sitting there for years. And you know, I'm not getting the details right, but I know for a fact that there are people, thousands of people returned back because they didn't have like a political position. They weren't like, you couldn't define them as refugees. They weren't really quote unquote, like they didn't have a reason to leave. Right. Yep. It was just because they found that, you know, the country was like in dire straits economically and they got on a boat. But by the time that they hit these interview stations to leave the camps, the intermediary camps of like Hong Kong and Thailand, they were turned down by certain countries. And then so they had nowhere to go and they have to go back. There's a lot of that, a lot of that happening.
And then so kind of connecting to like why that is, like, is that fair? And that's a whole nother conversation.
It really is. It really is. But these are things that there's so many things that are not discussed, and it's not discussed because people are trying to hide it. It's just, there's small details that people like you and me, we find interesting, but sometimes the whole world doesn't, you know, find it. It's small details that, that are minuscule, they're trivial, things like, you know, what happened to all the people that, you know, got sent back, you know, you know,
did couldn't they find a sponsor?
There's a lot of that. What did you, can you tell me about how your parents experienced the first time you presented the book and how did you do it?
So, like I said, so it was a surprise. I kept it a surprise for a while. And I surprised them this past Christmas. Part of me was just like, really, like, it's Christmas, it's perfect, like gift giving. So I drove home. I'm in LA, they live in Orange County. And I drove down one day. It was like a random weekend. It finally like came through the printers. I decided to actually write this handwritten letter, explaining to them what I did, the reason behind it. For me growing up, like I think the way we communicate, we're not really expressive when it comes to our feelings. So that's why I decided to write it in a letter. We didn't really say like, oh, I love you. And, you know, like now we do, but back then it just wasn't how we grew up. But anyway, I wrote in a letter. We were in the kitchen, it was very intimate. And I essentially said like, this is your early Christmas present. And they wrote the letter, in silence. And it was a really cool thing to experience. I was very nervous cause I didn't know how they would react, as you know, this is a book that I just, it's about them. Part of me is like, I hope they, you know, I get approval and they like it. Yeah, and their reaction was really shock. They're surprised. They're like, wow, this book is about me. It took time for my dad to like understand as he flipped through the first few pages, like, oh, this is like my family, these names. And I think it a few days later, like my dad called me and was like, wow, like I can't believe that you did this. And it was a really special moment.
I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. If my daughter did that to me, I think I would like die on the spot. I think I would like faint and I would just die and pass out from happiness.
Oh gosh. I just think it's, this is just, my parents have done so much for us. Yeah. And this is like one small thank you. Cause like, as I reflect back on like the type of life I've been afforded here in the States, getting to go to like a good school district and being able to grow up with my extended family as well. Like all that kind of stems to what my parents did. It's important to like remember
and it's turn special. It into a book. And it's special. And I'll be honest, that's why you're sitting here and we're talking, because I think that's such a more than the putting of the book together, more than the story itself of refugees, more than all of that, I think the thing that touches me the most is having a daughter write that and feeling so moved to spend years to put something like that together. I mean, I can feel it because I have a daughter, so that's why I connect to this scenario so much is because more than any of the cultural aspects of all of this, it's like, you know, men and women of my generation want to give our parents a fucking fuck you, you know? And I'm just being honest here. You know, some of our parents are assholes. I'll be honest. And it's not, sometimes when we dig back in, it's not their fault. You know, it takes years to process this. You know, my mom's mom was not nice to her. But after years of, you know, kind of like listening and understanding where my grandmother came from, you know, the harshness, everybody was like that. They were all like that. And then to see this current generation of you doing something like this, and you just said, I just want to show a little thank you. You know, and I'm like, many of us want to give a big fuck you to our, you know, to our parents. And there comes a time where all of the trauma needs the reckoning and to kind of figure it out. But it's a beautiful thing to arrive at a point where like some young child is giving what you even think is a small thank you. Well, you just said it's a small thank you. So I'm very emotionally moved by this story. Mm. The story within the story, right? The story of how it, it's beautiful to me.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, my parents, you know, they're human. They have flaws like myself. But yeah, that's separate. But with the book, I just, it was just really important to me to do.
And now how do you think your parents, think about your curiosity for their journey?
I haven't asked them that verbatim, to be honest. I would hope that they can see my curiosity through, you know, creating this book and knowing that I'm just beginning. I think I'm still in this early journey of really understanding, you know, my culture. And, you know, I've been asking my mom more about Vietnamese dishes and, you know, for a while. Yeah. So stuff like that, I feel like I'm still in this self-discovery and trying to think through how this will translate to like the next generation and like with my kids one day. That's a good question. I would want to ask my parents that. Cause the funny thing is like with at least my parents, they don't talk about it voluntarily. I think it's once you ask them, they're like open book. My dad will talk on and on about, you know, his experience in Vietnam now or growing up. But they don't like voluntarily talk about it. So I think people are willing to share, you know, what they've been through and, you know, sharing the stories. It's just a matter of like that curiosity and having that dialogue and talking to people about it. At least that's my own experience with my parents.
Yeah. Now, how can people get this book?
So I have a website. It's lesliewynwrites.com. So if you're interested, that's how you can order a copy.
Very cool. I we live in a day and age now where we can, you know, these books are print to order or order to print or something like that. And there is an ability for us to like change things. And, you know, do you think that certain parts of the book will be changed as a result of you living for the next, you know, few years? Will you modify it as time, or are you going to keep it the way it is and not do anything? I mean, I ask this because I want to hear how, preserving something that we think is the truth at one point in our life, you know, things change. We pick up more information. And we see things differently. Are you going to always keep this book the same, or are you going to change it as you go because it's a print order or order to print?
The demand. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a closed door. You know, things change. Talk to me next year. It might be different. So I would like to keep that door open. I also think this is version one. There might be a version two. There's a lot of detail and information that I'm sure I don't know about my parents' story that I could one day want to like embed and put in the book. And that's like the beauty of it, right? Like version one, version two. So I can definitely see another version in the future.
Yeah, we live in such a beautiful day and age where we can have these ideas for story and we can just like go to print and get this to a publisher, like a self-publishing place and mm-hmm. do it. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, on my podcast, there's big writers like, you know, people who are in huge publishing contracts and, you know, and then there's children's books like yours and
yeah.
I value the whole spectrum. The expression of what anybody has in their mind and putting it out there. And you know, so many times, like the story that's happening behind the story is so fascinating as well. And I like yeah. to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think I just learned so much these past few years. Because I wouldn't say I'm a very, like I'm creative, but when I wouldn't define myself just yet as like the artist that I seek to be one day. Like I think I'm more of a logical, like I studied science in college and asked me 10 years ago, I was like, me, a kid's book author? I don't think I would have said that 10 years back. And just like the journey and just all the steps required to creating this book, tons of Google Docs, tons of calls with my parents, you know, capturing like all the content, the research behind a book. Yeah, it was a really cool and rewarding experience. Hard, but good.
And the beauty of creativity is that it's a journey and it yeah. is a lifelong journey if you can really attach yourself to the practice of creating. And, you know, it only gets better. It doesn't get worse.
Yeah. And I think it's been a really cool journey seeing kind of the aftermath of once I published this and I shared it with my parents first and then like my smaller circle and, you know, seeing conversations come out of reading this book has been so rewarding. And, you know, that sparked their conversations to have, you know, learn about their parents and what they've been through. So it's really cool. Like this came from a book.
Yeah, I mean, as the day April 30 is around the corner again, you know, this is a good way for people to, you know, put it into their kids' minds. This is what your grandparents went through, or this is, you know, a previous generation harrowing escape mm-hmm. Journey. And this is the place that we all come from. Most of us come yeah. from.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Leslie, thank you so much. Today was fantastic. You are such a grounded young person that has this wonderful heart to give back to your parents, you know, your inner circle first. And then that kind of that love extends to the bigger community. And I hope that more people find your book and get interested in the story of, the refugee, the Vietnamese refugees.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, no, and thank you for your time and just giving me the space to talk more about everything that all the different topics connected to this book.
And I hope yeah. to see many, many more books coming from you. And I tell every author or artist that comes on, I'm like, this is what it's about. This is our time. We want to create and we want to create more space for this. And, you know, I would love to have you back on the podcast someday.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think that, this is just a start. We need more and more Vietnamese Absolutely. Authors and people in media. Yeah, I'm all about that. Yeah.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. At the Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcasts. Thanks again for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.